Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, it's the best of the Toms from Monkey Tennis here. Thanks for coming back for part three of our Nomad Deep Dive. This week sees us cover chapters 3 and 4 with hilarious consequences, naturally. Let's delay this no longer and get stuck into the chat. Lovely stuff.
I must complete the journey that my father never could. I must do it on foot. Can't remember why. It will be called The Footsteps of My Father Walk. My home isn't insulated.
Monkey tennis?
Heathrow is just an absolute tit of an airport. Quite simply, cows.
Monkey tennis?
With a stupid Ewok head.
Blabber on him, Nosey.
Love you, Aim.
Monkey tennis?
A total wazzock of a guy. Infinity, the final frontier.
Monkey tennis?
We will talk about it now, Mr. Nichols.
Monkey tennis?
Motherfucker. Gary Wilmot. Okay. Sue Cook. Okay. Dale Winton. Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
So, chapter 3, shirt back on now. What a title.
I thought do you not want to mention, like, a gynecologist bellowing into a woman?
Oh, yes, there is that. Yeah,
no,
that,
it's fine. We'll move on to chapter 3.
That's how Lynn shouts into letterboxes. Yes, I thought, what a title. Usually, titles like shirt back on now in books add a bit of mystery. You think, how will this phrase come to be relevant? But there it is in the first sentence. Okay, Alan, you can pop your shirt back on now.
There's no big reveal, is there?
With his GP, Dr. Tony Bracegirdle, or Doc as he's known, on our pub quiz team, Cromwell's Bitches. Now, as I was reading this, a local pub quiz to me put the results of their league up, and there was a team called Cromwell's Bitches,
really?
Which must have come
brilliant.
From this.
Amazing.
So yeah, he describes the doctor as a man who once spent 10 hours in a John Lewis choosing a sound bar for his TV.
Can I add my note here was Nick would do that?
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
I've got a Nick reference later on in this chapter.
Great.
As well.
I mean, I've got a sound bar. It's just in my dad's loft and has been for about a year.
How many hours did you spend choosing it?
No, I knew what I was getting.
You've let yourself down.
Always buy Sonos.
You just had to say that.
So his doctors told him that he's basically not in good condition, and he's using that as a bit of a drama that he may not be able to complete.
Yeah, you're not a fit man, Alan.
The news hits him like a clap, brackets of thunder, he thought he was in reasonable shape because a retired headmistress he once briefly dated, so, which means it can fit neatly into the Partridge timeline, said, I had the BMI and muscle definition of a man 5/6 my age, so that must be approximately 10 years younger. I also thought, if she's a retired headmistress, how old is she? She must be pushing 70. Yeah.
There's a little tiny detail that I think is worth pulling out, which I really liked when Alan talks about what it was like at the retired teacher's house. standing there in the flickering light of a portable TV, which is a little dig at teachers, like they can only afford portable TVs. Yeah.
Oh, teachers really come for it as well. Yeah, like, yeah, they really do cop it.
Oh, they do later, yeah.
Yeah.
Another of Alan's lovely acronyms here, where he says he needs to get himself into quite superb physical condition, QSPC, which does roll off the tongue. Mm-hmm. He says he last achieved it as a teenager in the mid-1970s, when he became one of the first children in Norfolk to take up an exciting avant-garde art form called Irish dancing.
Now, that's referenced in I, Partridge, the Irish dancing, and I think I remember Nick pointing out that it was a real shame that we never got to see Alan doing any Irish dancing in any of the TV output. Still keen to see.
Definitely would be keen to see.
They're obviously making it a thing about the character, so it'd be nice to see a...
Ties into Flatly, My Dear, I Don't River Dance as well.
Yeah.
I like that he claims he used to wow the girls by walking the entire way to school in just 4 gulps of air.
Holding his breath became an absolute pleasure.
A stunning achievement. He says he was always flattered by the celebratory hail of stones that would rain down on me at the end of a wrench.
That's brilliant. That's,
come on. Yeah. That's a bit silly.
But that's when he's talking about whistling, isn't it? Saying whistling was the rap music of its day.
Oh, yes. And that no other children were on nodding terms with the basic musical staples of a military funeral, which is probably why so many of his former classmates are now on 0-hour contracts. Fast forward to the present day. Got there yet? A brilliant opening there. Yes, he says that having spoken to his doctor, it isn't hard to read between the lines. I thought, maybe he has a bit. He's claiming that he needs to get into QSPC in the next 2 weeks or the walk will surely kill him.
Yeah. Is he really... Do you think he's hamming up his physical state or not? Because I didn't expect him to kind of get that news from Docky Bracegirdle.
I'm not sure he is, because surely he would want the reader to know that he was, in great condition.
Exactly.
He wouldn't talk about it unless... I don't know. I don't know why
he's trying to just add an extra element of peril that isn't really there.
I don't know.
Yeah, so the medical advice is... Don't do it. You're not fit enough. But it just seems odd because...
He's not fit enough to walk.
Well, but it just seems... I understand why they're doing it, but the knock-on effect of that is that Alan's basically crippled by obesity or just a poor heart or something.
It's he has got a fat back.
Yeah, I don't think he's given the doctor the schedule. I think he's hyped up to the doctor the rate at which he's got to do this 160-mile walk.
Right.
And the doctor said, well, you're actually not in great condition. You should probably do some exercise first.
And then he's hammed it up to be like, whoa,
you will die.
You will die if you do this.
To be fair, he does say since 2010, my buttocks have become increasingly slack and gelatinous.
And he does take a photo of them at the start of each financial year for his own records. The point he's trying to make is this: while I may not be a meathead like Ben Fogle or Dan Snow, who he obviously slags off again in this time, I do keep myself in pretty decent nick. And tries to develop. Oh, and he no need to spend his training time, as he knows Dan does, trying to develop pecs as big as tits. And then there's a massive footnote about Dan Snow and Ben Fogle, or Snogle, and them reducing other presenters to tears in the BBC gym.
I like the way that in the APU and kind of in the Gibbons era, they've kind of identified the targets, like the kind of celebs or even like the crap celebs that Alan dislikes, and they're consistent throughout the universe after that point.
And it's my understanding that their sort of fictionalization of real people, they basically felt like they could get away with it because who's going to sue Alan Partridge?
Yeah, it makes you look petty and stupid, doesn't it, to sue the
character? Yeah, so like if Noel Edmonds tried to sue about the Edmonds chapter, they'd be like...
You look like a Wazzock.
Yeah.
So Edmonds basically just has to take an absolute pounding without any like risk of comeback.
I think he probably does.
Yeah, your character can be like pulled through the mud essentially, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And knowing how litigious Edmonds is, I'm quite surprised that effectively he would let 10% of this book slagging him off go unchallenged. A couple of little bits over the coming pages. Alan says he's a committed animal liker, hashtag animals, he throws in there into a printed book.
I say in this chapter I did start noticing there are a couple of short, quite quick one word jokes, so things like hashtag animals, and I think he says Kenyish in this chapter. I think those are the sort of things, I think they really, they work best in the audiobook, I think.
And there's some nice throwaway theories as well. I won't go into too much detail, but basically he believes that pheasants are too sad to live and keeps trying to prove his natural flair for geography by just throwing in facts that the reader is not expecting and didn't ask for. Karachi has a population of 9.3 million. The capital of Azerbaijan is Baku, etc., etc. Yeah,
Wikipedia really is a great resource, isn't it?
That's absolute, like, David Brent behaviour in the office when he's showing off his Dostoevsky knowledge.
Some wonderful just little tidbits about his life, like he likes to play chiropodists off against each other because he believes his feet deserve the best care at the best possible price. Next up, he's starting his training regime with aplomb at the local swimming baths, once again using some literary wizardry. Wallop, a man's body smashes into the water, a billion tiny air bubbles fizzing around it like a nagging ex-wife. Carol reference. Ping, the lids of his eyes pop open, but the balls of his eyeballs, make a shocking discovery. Why the hell is he naked? The pain, suddenly he's clawing at his peepers. Well, of course he is. There's acid in the water. And then he basically patronises the reader, saying, stop, take a breath, it's going to be okay. It's just an immediate writing style that I'm trying out. I mean, it's the same one he used when there were 4 minutes to save East Anglia earlier on as well, isn't it? Research shows that a lot of my readers went to polytechnics, he says. So he switched into powerful high-octane prose.
Don't worry, there's even more patronising behaviour later when he tries to explain what an intonation is. So more of that to come.
I would have to say I have definitely experienced a massive hit of pure adrenaline listening to that writing style.
And so, yeah, he was describing nothing more than a trip to the local swimming pool. The passage told the story of a man, Alan Partridge, or me, diving in and feeling the perfectly innocent sting of chlorine in his / my eyes. So yeah, but then he tries it again. Basically he then writes whoosh, swell, tumble turn. Effectively he fails a tumble turn. That's what happens in that passage.
The bit that I like in this section in footnote again is where he's talking about the perfectly innocent sting of chlorine in his / my eyes. The footnote goes on to say, no, I was using something called artistic license, which is a literary term for lying.
Oh yeah, for authors such as myself, it can be a real boon, allowing us to make up anything we want and never be challenged.
See the chapter about Edmonds. Yeah,
and there's a lot of great stuff about that where they really just mocked literary tropes, don't they?
And him basically writing a book about the process of writing a book, like this next passage where he says, the point is, when your publisher tells you to skip the training section because it only works on film and is boring in prose, it's not hard to make them eat those words and prove once and for all they don't know what they're on about and should maybe pipe down in the future.
He's definitely proved it.
Why am I in a swimming pool? Oh, this is brilliant. Before we get into this bit, let's remember the thrust of this book is a 160-mile walk. Why am I in a swimming pool? Well, I don't like walking because walking is boring and also I have two cars. On page 44 of a book about a walking journey. Yeah.
Chapter 3, he hates walking.
It's probably time to talk about Quaddy, isn't it? Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So Alan, I mean, much of this book, he claims, so much of it, you know, inverted commas, claims, he's had a life rich in aquatic activity. True, I didn't enter a swimming pool at all between the ages of 6 and 11 because I became scared of an imaginary water monster called Quaddy. So,
What do we think quaddy is?
Well, according to Urban Dictionary, it's a quadruple amputee, but I don't think that's what Alan's referring to.
Not what he was imagining.
No, I don't struggle swimming for a start.
I mean, is questions in a group, is anybody kind of scared of bodies of water at all?
I love a swim in a pool. I love a sea.
Learned to swim very young.
Yeah, love the sea.
We all like water.
Do we?
Yeah.
Seawater?
I've got a bit of a thing for it.
So
I don't like sea monsters.
Right, okay.
When you say sea monsters, you mean like crabs.
You mean a fish.
Yeah, an octopus and jellyfish.
Ooh. So is quaddy an amalgamation of all of those things in your head?
Yeah, I think I have a similar feeling to Alan that there is something in the water that will get me because I am basically a bacon sandwich in swimming shorts and things will peck and eat.
Now, see, you always say this like they always want to nibble you, but I don't, like, they don't.
Has that ever happened?
The only thing that might want to eat you is a shark. Might, and they hardly ever kill humans.
I'm not going out that deep into the water
exactly,
to be eaten
so
by
sharks. They're not going to nibble you.
No, but...
Smile, you son of a bitch.
There might be something under the water that sees me coming in, like a quaddy.
Like a quaddy. In your mind, what does quaddy look like? I really want to get into this.
Quaddy looks like, and Jed'll like this, the creature in Basket Case. That's what quaddy looks like.
Bilal.
I was thinking more something like the creature from the Black Lagoon, something like that, you know.
No, it's a little like claw-like monster, right, like the thing in Basket Case.
When I read quaddy, I immediately got images of old Greg from the Mighty Boosh. that's also good.
If any listeners would like to sketch their interpretations of quaddy,
yes.
And email them into thepartridgepod@gmail.com, we'll certainly do a Tony Hart style roundup of your best pictures.
Yep. Or send us your quaddies.
Or post them on socials and tag us on that and we'll share them, gladly share them.
Absolutely.
Particularly because it will terrify Nick.
if you could tag Nick. Yeah, no, I was going to say, you could do a drawing of quaddy, perhaps nibbling on Nick.
Yes.
Yes.
Attacking
yes.
Nick.
Yeah. People won't know what I look like. Just draw a handsome man.
That'd be very misrepresented.
Just a handsome man in swim shorts being savaged by a sea quaddy.
Alan gets up at, well, he initially gets up at 6 and then he realises the leisure centre doesn't open until 7, so he changes his training time to 7, and then his alarm's set for 5, so he sits snooze every 10 minutes until just before 7, which I've calculated is 11 snoozes.
Never snoozing as well.
I'm not a snoozer.
Just get up.
I did a bit of crunching on the numbers here. So he says that he does swimming 2 hours a day from 7 till 9, right? So mid-morning matters begins at 10, I think, is what we understand.
Yep.
Now, going back into Welcome to the Places of My Life, when you've got him driving around Norwich and all the maps and stuff, he actually says the leisure centre is 2.2 miles away from North Norwich Digital, North Norwich's best music mix. What I quite like about this, and it's quite a subtle gag that is not necessarily intentional, but if he's leaving the swimming pool at 9, he's got over 2 miles to drive to get to the station. His show starts at 10. It's doable. He can definitely make it in time. But what that does mean is there's definitely zero prep time for his show. And which we've always said about Alan, he definitely doesn't prepare his radio set. So that really holds up. I like that.
Yeah. Yep. And also, he's obviously tried to attack this training regime by getting up too early. And that's why he now often finds himself asleep in the water. And he ends up being lapped by a pensioner who comes to play quite a big part in this story, Dawn. She calls herself Dawn and is indeed called Dawn.
Another question, similar with Harvey Kennedy. Who do you think would play Dawn in a filmed version of Nomad?
Dame Judi Dench.
Yes. You're going Dench.
Get Dench.
I've gone Dench.
Yeah. Go down that Philomena route.
Yep. Nice.
Any advance on Dench?
It needs to be someone that can play a retired dinner lady.
My mind immediately went to, I can't think of her name. Is it Patricia Highsmith? Is that her name?
Patricia Routledge from Keeping Up Appearances.
Yes. Highsmith Bouquet.
I think her acting years are behind her, but certainly in her heyday, she'd have been a formidable Dawn. Can I also just throw in a wild card, Andy Serkis, to play the part of Quaddy?
Yes.
Sold.
That's commissioned.
Dawn is here to keep fit, or as fit as a pensioner can realistically be. And Alan, effectively over the coming pages, imagines a huge rivalry similar to that with Tesco lifer Pat Bevan when he's behind the Tesco checkout in Scissored Isle. She clearly is just a happy-go-lucky pensioner just minding her own business, but he's built this into an intense rivalry
that basically doesn't exist. She's barely aware of him.
Do you think that actually his training regime would have fallen by the wayside if he didn't feel like he had someone to compete against? I think that's he needs
probably
this,
yeah,
yeah. 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 And so, yeah, he says, He's going to challenge her to a race. The race will be two lengths of the pool and he will beat her comfortably, ripping her, to use a piece of modern day parlance that I personally find deeply unpleasant, a new arsehole. Didn't have to say it, did he? No. Didn't have to say it. So yeah, I mean, over the next few pages, he's still challenging her to this challenge that she doesn't even seem to know that she's been asked to take part in. And yes,
I mean, this is...
I haven't got a huge amount to say on this.
It's essentially, it's quite a long, drawn-out story.
A long, drawn-out affair.
Yeah, a long, drawn-out affair about these two challenging... Well, essentially, Alan challenging her, and the payoff is essentially that he started drowning and she saved him.
There's one little detail that I quite like, where he says, "I slid back into the pool, creating barely a ripple. Footnote, of all the disciplines involved in swimming, I'm perhaps most adept at the getting in."
There are a couple of really nice passages I do like in this chapter, though. A few phrases like, "hanging around the woman's changing room looks weird." And then he says, "especially for a middle-aged broadcaster in the current climate." He talks about the gracefulness of his swimming, but then I really love this phrase, "my legs are going absolutely gangbusters."
He's not a good swimmer, essentially.
Him referencing forgetting to drink his egg smoothie, which just made me feel a bit ill. Stab.
Yeah, but probably producer Jed feel quite aroused. Yeah. He loves an egg.
The comment on the lifeguard busy sending a text, I thought, yeah, that seems quite likely. And just calling Dawn his geriatric nemesis, and I think it's quite nice how, by the end of the book, that naming does change.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Dawn has got a little journey of her own to go on. So we're on to chapter 4, Be Prepared. He's skulking at the beginning of this chapter near a bar in a media haunt called the Hospital Club in central London. Now, I believe all four of us at one point or another have been to said club.
Have been.
Mm-hmm. It's the rap party for series 38 of Watchdog, the BBC consumer rights show, which I still think should have been called Ombudsman. I mean, I actually think Ombudsman's not a bad name for it.
No. It suggests an arbitrator that has authority to make decisions. Mm-hmm. Essentially.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks for the definition then.
Would we like to talk a little bit about how he's managed to gain access to this BBC event? It's because he's the plus one of BBC Breakfast, Bill Turnbull, who has taken Alan instead of his wife because he provided a urine sample when bosses sprung a surprise medical on the team.
Brilliant.
Not to take this in down a sad route, but poor old Bill Turnbull's had to come off BBC now because he's got prostate cancer.
So get well soon, Bill.
This is obviously
that makes this joke
then
seem quite mean.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. It's kind of like
that aside, and obviously get well soon. I do like the idea that he's the only one that's being given these tests. Like Susanna Reid is just, you know, broadcasting without it. It's just Bill picking up.
Oh no, it says a surprise medical on the team. He's not been singled out.
Yep, it does say that.
Yeah, it really does.
It really does say that.
But I think what's good. No, it's fine. I think what's gold is his wife isn't happy about being bumped. She'd had her hair done and everything. So see, Alan's really elbowed his way and been like, "No, Bill, I have to come with you tonight."
I mean, even the idea that she would have her hair done for basically a party for the 38th series of Watchdog.
Also, what had Bill done that his urine would have revealed? STD,
left drug intake. What is it?
I think the implication is probably drugs.
Drugs.
A heavy mix of drug and drink.
So the thrust of this whole scene is basically that Alan can reacquaint himself with Harvey Kennedy, the agent that he met back at the beginning of chapter one or two. He believes that he's going to get a TV series around this walk that is brewing in his mind. Harvey says to him, why not? Why not? When Alan says, "Would broadcasters be keen on the concept?" That's the solid confirmation Alan needs to go ahead. "I'll leave that with you," Alan shouts after him, so we know he never heard that. "Let you do your thing with the commissioners." Very much the same sort of weird linguistic twisting that put Simon Heffer on the veranda back in I'm Alan Partridge. He takes that as it's a given that this is going to be a TV series. His head is exploding. He's Billy Bighead.
I am such a bighead.
That's quite important, actually. Billy Bighead has a footnote to it. To be clear, this is not a reference to William Gabbitas, the son of my late friend. Pete's legacy lives on here. Although he is referred to as Billy Bighead in and around Norwich, it's because he has an unusually large head, an optical illusion caused by a thick, bushy hair, which fluffs up when he takes his motorbike helmet off in a hot pub. Whereas I'm Billy Bighead.
I love how specific that is.
Because I'm feeling big-headed. Yeah, another a little sly dig at Trish Goddard as well. He claims that he says, guess he's back in the big time. She says, fuck should I know?
the list of people is brilliant. I love that this is obviously played out again in this time with Alan Partridge, where they riffed on this joke as well. I do like that they kind of, you know, they're not above repeating jokes across multiple formats,
dragging Trish Goddard, Jamie Theakston, and Delia Smith into the bit.
I didn't know Theakston was a Norwich or East Anglian resident.
Well, is it grounded in fact, or is it just reading off a list of celebs?
The rest of them are. Trish is from Norwich, Delia's from Norwich.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this...
Martin Brundle?
Oh, I see. Yeah, he does drive to visit Choice Friends, doesn't he? This isn't at the event anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe he's taken a special trip just to catch Theakston.
We've got Martin Brundle, Trish Goddard, Jamie Theakston, Delia Smith, but he doesn't have time for Neil Buchanan or Michaela Strachan.
Well,
and commune.
And, yeah, crucially.
Yeah, the commune.
No time to stop at Neil Buchanan's flat or Michaela Strachan's commune. Yeah. Oh, and also Neil Buchanan can only afford a flat, saying.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
Brundle is from King's Lynn in Norfolk, so I think they must all be linked to the area.
Can we fact check Theakston?
Theakston, right, bear with. Live Googling. Here we go. Jamie,
how quickly can a man type?
Theakston.
He's really under pressure here, listeners.
He is from
perspiration.
Sussex.
Wonderfully nondescript.
It's a no.
But
hang on, just because he's from Sussex, he could still live there.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, this deserves a spin-off episode, if anything, isn't it? Yeah. It is Theakston from
bonus content.
Where in the world is Jamie Theakston?
Should we set up a Patreon just for Jamie Theakston analysis?
Yes.
Yep.
So he's back at North Norfolk Digital, starting to work out if he can get the time off to go on this walk. And then we get a little bit of intel about Beverly Backton, the anchor of the 7 till 9 slot.
Just before we get into the peerless Beverly Backton, just the thing I noticed going through this book on like the fourth time, he says, it's a matter I know I have to handle with gloves made from the skin of a baby goat. Now, there is a point later in the book when he talks about yew tree, I think it's in a footnote, where he discusses that they were no longer allowed to use the phrase kid gloves on air.
In the paperback, that's the footnote to this mention. A Beverly Backton has a higher profile, a larger pay packet, and tough to justify, a better parking space.
That's the thing he's annoyed about.
So annoyed. And he says, with so many people demanding her attention, it's no surprise she can rarely find the time to put her dirty mugs in the dishwasher like everyone else. So bitter.
That's a thing that's second on the list of importance, isn't it, after the parking space?
Yeah. Oh, there's an indication that his listeners are likely to have outlived at least one partner, where he says, the point is, if you listen to mid-morning radio, it's because you want to. It's because a certain DJ connects with you, often in a way you haven't experienced since the death of your late husband. So he knows he's very much talking to widowers, and that's his audience. And listener figure update, he says, at the last count, there were over 3,000 people listening to his show.
Does that mean he's got 3,001 people listening?
Yes.
Yes, he says, it's no surprise when his written request for time off is met with a swift rejection by station manager Greg Frampton. Sleep well, Greg. As we remember from the film.
I love the bit when he writes about Greg's pasty lying prone on his desk, and I'll be honest, it stinks. There's also a reference to United Farm and Animal Feed here, which is another former sponsor that was referenced in Scissored Isle. So again, very consistent backstory here. Mm,
presumably no longer a sponsor, as he's happy to admit that they put chicken shit in their feed. and there's more references to Greg's spinelessness. We know Greg is a coward from Alpha Papa, one of the few people that's actually worse than Alan.
Yeah.
He says, I like Greg and I'm very fond of his wife and young family, but that doesn't stop him being a truly spineless human being.
Although it's interesting, this means then that Greg has stayed on at North Norfolk Digital after the failed rebranding of Shape from the Alpha Papa.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Because obviously at the end of Alpha Papa, they've rebranded it all back to NND.
Cowards
do prosper. But
Greg
is still there. Yeah, they really do.
So the next section opens, good morning, listeners. WTF? I sound like some sort of polite machine gun. Alan is basically about to break the news to his 3,000 widowed listeners that he's taking some time off.
And no one's really going to care, are they?
Nope. He hasn't been this nervous since the final day of the 02-03 tax year, when he'd had a bad few months and came perilously close to not being able to say he was a higher rate taxpayer. So I crunched the numbers on that. At that time, that would have meant he was close to earning under £37,500 a year.
Well, over that means you're the highest rate
at that point. You would have had to be a higher rate taxpayer.
I think we had to work this out before on Mid-Morning Matters as well, because he is so obsessed about being in a certain tax bracket, isn't he?
He gets annoyed with Simon Denton, making jokes at his expense. He says, it really is incessant with this guy. We're not even on air. I can only assume his parents neglected him as a child, and he's now stuck in an endless cycle of trying to win people's approval. And I thought, I'm not sure he's wrong there either. I think that could be true about Simon.
Well, the thing about Simon is that he's adopted, isn't it? And whenever he goes to tell Alan about that, Alan just cuts him off and doesn't listen.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Yeah, there's some sadness in his eyes, forever playing the clown. So, yes, he says... he asked Simon to fill in. And like all sidekicks, Simon dreams of emerging from his master's shadow. I mean, master is a tall order there.
Say what?
He's thrown that in as well.
I also enjoy the reference to Noel Edmonds, despite the fact that later on he insists on calling him Edmonds.
Save it.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Simon has incredibly thin skin. But he says, Alan does provide at least one piece of praise, such as, you arrived on time today. Yeah. I mean, that's not praise. That's just a fact, isn't it?
Yeah.
You remember to use antiperspirant instead of deodorant. You sat quietly at the back while I interviewed the guest. It's like when you give kids a sticker that's like, I was brave at the doctor's.
Yeah.
Oh dear. But he then ranks Simon's comedy. He's got a hell of a lot of time for Simon Denton and genuinely believes that his ability to think up a pun at short notice puts him right up there with the very best of the Cambridge Footlights guys and not a million miles behind the people who write Christmas cracker jokes.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh dear. He then says that Simon will most likely never get the extra airtime he craves. In this case, Alan's put on the whole of Queen's seminal album Jazz. I've got a couple of jazz facts for you here. That album has sold 5 million copies. It went to number 2 in the UK. It was promoted by a bike race with nude women, set up to promote the Fat Bottom Girls.
Fat Bottom Girls, yeah.
A different time.
Being a marketing manager then. Yeah. I've got an idea.
I can tell you that it wasn't fine back then because a Rolling Stone review of the album.
Here we go.
A Rolling Stone review of this album called Queen, and I quote, the first truly fascist rock band.
Wow.
Yeah. But it does contain Queen's best song, Don't Stop Me Now.
Alan says, in this case, I've put on the whole of Queen's seminal album, Jazz. Adam, have you got details on how long it is?
I don't know. What's the running time of
this
thing?
Has anyone got that?
Well, I've looked it up. So released on November the 10th, 1978, the album consists of 13 songs and is 44 minutes long.
Oh, okay.
Epic.
That's like 30% of the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Presumably leaves the gaps in between as well. What a professional.
What a Dilbert.
So his nerves need quashing. Thankfully, he knows exactly what to do and heads to the disabled toilet to centre himself with some mindfulness techniques and half a bottle of white wine. He does love using the disabled facilities, doesn't he?
Yeah,
whether
he
it's
really
car
does,
parking
yeah.
space or toilet.
Yeah.
Camera light.
Can we just get back a little? I like the detail that Alan emails Simon each evening at 11 p.m. with a full breakdown of his performance on that day's show. Really nice touch.
Very thorough. Yes. So then he's walking around the radio station, basically just trying to excite everyone about his future walk. He says that he's talking to Beverly Backton, explains that Greg would do well to show him more respect, as would everyone, and that he's got a good mind to sack this job off entirely and focus on my TV work. What TV work, she asks, and I slide on one of my business cards without even looking. It's a cool move and no mistake.
I think it's worth mentioning the messages of support that he gets that morning as well, which include, good luck, Alan, take as long as you need, don't hurry back, Alan, and will Wally Banter be filling in? He's great.
A lot of parts of this book where he's addressing the reader, it's almost like he's doing a Forward Solutions motivational talk. He says, yeah. Talking about his plans also provoke darker feelings. Ever heard of the green-eyed monster? Yes, a few nods of recognition there, he says yeah. to the reader.
In terms of the messages of support he's getting, Alan says, whatever I hear these people mumble about me as I pass them in the corridor, the term sad prick seems to be the most popular.
He tries to make the walk seem more noble by talking about his friend and voiceover artist, John Maber, who would love to walk anywhere, let alone to Dungeness, but a recent car crash, for which I'm afraid John was entirely to blame, has put paid to his spine. John now lives in a wheelchair. And he then starts talking about the size of his balls for a couple of paragraphs. Says that if his real balls were as big as metaphorical ones, he'd have to see out his days in a care home for the clinically big bald.
We've lost him.
Oh, yeah, a follow-up to the bit where he says the term sad prick seems to be the most popular. He says he's not about to hold a grudge. In fact, and I'm going to surprise you here, I actually forgive him.
Whoa, what a surprise.
Amazing.
Oh, no, but then there's a detail a little bit later where he says, I have to admit that some of the happiest times of my life have been as a result of getting someone back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like
pushing them at a urinal, probably.
Yes, or one of the options he gives is that he orders 60 Littlewoods catalogues to be delivered to the place where they live, where their partner lives, where their children live, and you can seriously shake them up.
Now, the thing about Littlewoods catalogues, I just wanted to dwell on this slightly. That is a gag that me and my friends used to do to each other back in, well, I guess the 90s, where you could just phone up and kind of give an address and then people would be signed up to the catalogue. So you do that as a gag with like all these mail order catalogues arriving at the house. I mean, what's going on?
When climate change wasn't a thing, you could just willingly send thousands of pieces of paper to people's houses. Yeah,
sadly, in the research for this podcast, when I try to do that gag, I find that Littlewoods don't do physical catalogues. So instead, I've just signed you all up to their mailing list.
Right.
Do enjoy.
Is it just what, a website now?
Yeah, it's just a website now, I think. I'm going to take a choice line from the penultimate and the last paragraph of this section. From the penultimate, it says, my longing for revenge, much like the foreskin of an adult Jew, simply isn't there anymore. And then the line I'll take from the final one is, because needless to say, I'll have the last laugh. So absolutely contradictory. Yeah.
And I think there are two uses of the last laugh line in this book.
Yes, yep. There are.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key line that I had from this chapter was, it's not really about getting a TV series, it's about honouring Dad, and I can't emphasise that enough. Footnote for me, lie. Yeah.
There's a slightly confused phone call where he gets through to Harvey Kennedy's assistant, and he gets confused about which question of his she's answering. Basically, it's just a device to allow us to string him along a bit longer, thinking he's going to get a TV series out of this. That brings us to the end of chapter 4 and the first section of the book that we'll be covering, and more or less the end of today's episode. But just a couple of things to round off. Firstly, I've got another little quiz here for you. It's a higher or lower quiz based on Google Trends. You remember back at the very beginning of this quite long episode, we talked about the poem that Alan put at the start of the book, where he basically describes different forms of motion. I'm going to run through those forms of motion, and I want you to tell me if the one I'm saying was higher or lower worldwide popularity on Google over the last 12 months than the one that came before.
This is basically our new regular feature, A Partridge Amongst Pixels.
Yes,
exactly. Yep. That. So the way this works, I'm going to go through the terms Alan uses for forward motion, and you need to tell me on Google Trends worldwide last 12 months if the one I'm reading out is higher or lower in popularity than the one that came before. Like, you all to give separate answers, and as soon as one of you gets something wrong, you'll be locked out for the remainder of the quiz.
It's an elimination quiz.
Why can anyone make it to the end?
Fresh twist.
So the first word is walk. I want to know if this next word is higher or lower. Trek.
Now, would that include Star Trek?
I mean, well, yeah, it's the word. The it's the word Trek. The
okay, so I'm going higher then.
I'm going to go lower.
I'm going lower.
It is lower. Stob is frozen out. It's now
straight
between
out.
Nick and Tom
straight
Stab.
Out.
Higher or lower than Trek? The word hike.
Lower.
Higher.
Ooh. Tom Dark is out.
Am I the winner?
Yeah.
Playing.
Yeah, you still might not make it to the end. Higher or lower than hike, the word yomp.
Lower.
Correct. Higher or lower than yomp, amble.
Higher.
Correct. Higher or lower than amble, ramble.
Higher.
Correct. Higher or lower than ramble, womble.
Lower.
Correct. Oh. Higher or lower than womble, wander.
Yeah, higher.
Correct.
Oh,
higher or lower than wander, slither.
Lower.
Incorrect.
Oh!
Slither is higher than wander.
How many more?
Oh, we're about halfway through.
Okay, great.
Just to quickly run through the rest of those. Hither is lower than slither. Thither is lower than hither. March is higher than thither. Mince is lower than march. Trudge is lower than mince. Traipse is lower than trudge. Stroll is higher than traipse. Stride is higher than stroll. Stomp is higher than stride. And stop is higher than stomp.
What I would say to that is, get Darren Day hosting that, and you've basically got a show that's perfect for the mid-afternoon slot.
My mum and dad saw Darren Day the other day.
Really? How is he?
On a cruise ship. That's how he is.
Great.
So if you've got any feedback about Nomad, or questions or thoughts on Partridge as a whole, please do get in touch with us, and don't forget to send us those pictures of Quaddy attacking Nick. The email
email is thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, Twitter @thepartridgepod, Instagram @monkeytennispod. And there's a Monkey Tennis hotline. If you're going to call that, please do try and leave us a WhatsApp voice note for better audio quality and a higher chance of featuring on a future episode. The number for that is 07923 600 017. We'll be back looking at More Than My Fair Share, Footsteps of My Father, Walk Eve, and My Route in next week's episode. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thank you so much for listening. Please do rate and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
For God's sake, remember your sandwiches.
I must complete the journey that my father never could. I must do it on foot. Can't remember why. It will be called The Footsteps of My Father Walk. My home isn't insulated.
Monkey Tennis?
Heathrow is just an absolute tit of an airport. Quite simply, cows.
Monkey Tennis?
With his stupid Ewok head.
Blah blah on him, Knowlesy.
Love you, Aim.
Monkey Tennis?
A total wazzock of a guy. Infinity, the final frontier.
Monkey Tennis?
We will talk about it now, Mr. Nichols.
Monkey Tennis?
Motherfucker. Gary Wilmot. Okay. Sue Cook. Okay. Dale Winton. Okay.
Monkey Tennis?
Oh, fuck off, Nick.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.